Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Doug, how's everybody this evening? Just come back from a great investigation, hey, Doug?
Yeah, it was an interesting experience, and we'll be talking about that tonight. And joining us on the show tonight is Mike Jones, who's also the investigator. Mike.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
All right, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. I hope everybody else is, too.
And we're going to also have, as a special guest, Bonnie Korniak, who will be joining us here just momentarily, and we'll get her on, and we'll be discussing some things. Just let's go through some of the typical stuff. We had, of course, we weren't on last week. It was Thanksgiving. Hope everybody had a nice Thanksgiving. And so tonight we're going to be talking about the investigation we did at Cedar Key. We apologize that we weren't able to broadcast that. We got up to the area, and we had an air card, and we just could not get enough of a signal to upload video, so it just wasn't going to work, and we just weren't able to broadcast it. So it's unfortunate, but we're here to kind of talk about it and talk about some of the things that we did. Trying to think of anything that I need to announce on the site. Nothing that comes to mind other than if you're not a member of Paranexus, we'd sure love to have you as a member. So visit paranexus.org and join us. Now let's set the stage a little bit for this investigation. This is one that was planned a few months ago, and Bonnie Korniak and her boyfriend Eric Watson, who owns the property, had invited us, and we were talking with them to get this whole thing going. And it's in the Cedar Key area, and frankly, it's in the wilderness. There's a cabin there. And so we weren't at any particular hotel, although Bonnie had done an investigation. Also along with us was Paranexus member Gene Springer, and we had an opportunity to meet her for the first time. So her and Bonnie were also doing an investigation of the Cedar Key Hotel and even the cemetery, and she's in our chat room here, and she'll probably say something. I think she already has. So we got up to the cabin on Monday, November 23rd, so about a week and a half ago or so. Boy, it's gone fast, hasn't it?
Oh, that's for sure.
So we got up there. I don't know, what was it, about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Something like that. So we got up there in early afternoon, and also on the investigation was Gregory Kent, board member for Paranexus, and we now have Bonnie with us. Hey, Bonnie, it's great to have you on the show. Glad you could make it.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we were just
welcome.
Talking about some the Cedar Key location. We gave the latitude and longitude so everybody can go there.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear that.
And he promised you he wouldn't do that, didn't he?
So we got up there on Monday, November 23rd, in the early afternoon, and of course Bonnie and Eric and Gene were waiting for us, and Grant, Gregory, Mike, and myself met them there. In fact, Mike flew to Florida to join in on this. So it was great to meet Mike for the first time. We've been seeing each other over Skype for, what, a year and a half?
Oh, at least, yeah.
So it's good to meet in the flesh. And so we got up there. Now, this investigation, there's been a number of different phenomena that's happened at the cabin. Bonnie, would you like to just fill us in a little bit on some of the things that you guys have experienced over the years?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. There's been everything from Bigfoot activity to UFO things and to spirit activity as well. With the Bigfoot activity, we've heard wood knocking, and a neighbor right down the road from us actually saw 8-foot hairy creature walking upright down the road. Eric and I have both seen UFOs in the area, and as far as the spirits go, it's kind of just a feeling of being watched all the time.
Yeah, a lot of interesting stuff. And, you know, I also should add that it was also good to meet Bonnie for the first time. Of course, Eric and Jean. Bonnie is a certified paranexus field investigator, and so it was good to work with her and Jean as well. And, of course, Eric. So you've had some different things. So we were going on this investigation, you know, with the hopes of, you know, seeing something. I mean, we've got several things to choose from, it would seem. And so we got up there, and the first thing that we did was kind of take a little bit of a walk around the property. And Gregory Kent, who is, of course, a medium, kind of got some of his impressions on the area, and as he was telling me, he was picking up some impressions of Native Americans on the land, so it was an interesting thing. Any of you guys want to add anything on Gregory's impressions?
No, it was the thing that I thought was really nice was, you know, the cabin was in a real wilderness area, and Eric and Bonnie had been kind enough to kind of one could easily get lost out there if you weren't familiar with it. Wouldn't you guys agree? And they were kind enough to put markers up on the trail so that we could go out and kind of, you know, try to feel the area out. I got some interesting impressions. I think, talking with Gregory, you know, I had some feelings of Native Americans myself, but, you know, it is a wilderness, and they were in the area, so... But a very interesting piece of property in a very private area, and with very little interaction by folks off the street, that's for darn sure.
Yeah, you didn't. There's nothing. You did not hear one bit of civilization out there. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's truly a wilderness.
Yeah, it was an interesting area. Of course, there was. There's also wild boars out there. There's deer. Of course, a few other smaller animals: armadillos, raccoons, squirrels, things like that. We had seen at least, chiggers. I didn't see any of the wild boars or the deer. Did any of you guys see any of that?
No,
I saw plenty of tracks though.
Yeah. But the thing that was also very interesting too is, you know, I mean, the fact that this property was private, and the public couldn't gain any access to it, which, you know, eliminated any kind of, you know, people out there tramping around in the woods making noises or trying to create hoaxes or anything along those lines. There's nobody out there.
Yeah. Yeah. As a quick FYI for everybody, if your mic's too close to your mouth, take it a little bit further away for some breathing. Unfortunately, it's not heavy breathing. Otherwise, I'd take that as a compliment. So, anyway, so we spent some time kind of checking out the lay of the land, so to speak. We spent some time trying to get the broadcast to work, but we couldn't do that, as I'd mentioned at the outset of the program. We couldn't do that. Trying to think of now, the next thing that I remember is the fabulous supper that Bonnie made for us.
Oh, come on.
Yep. You guys were the ultimate hosts.
Just kebabs, and it was just...
Yeah, it was great.
Gene was right in there helping, and
Well, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. It was our pleasure.
No, I want to go back just for that. So we kind of, you know, of course it got dark, and it's pretty dark out there, I'll tell you that, at night. I mean, boy, pitch black, there was really no moon to speak of. And we started, we arranged to do the table tipping. Of course, Gregory always facilitates that. And that was something that was a new experience for Bonnie and Eric and Jean. And I think there was even some trepidation, wasn't there, Bonnie?
No.
No? You still there?
Hello.
I'm here.
Bonnie, still there?
Yes, I am. Oh, can you hear me?
Good.
Yeah.
We thought we lost you to the ether there for a second, Bonnie.
Oh, jeez.
So, anyway, so, of course, you guys had never done the table tipping before.
Correct.
Yeah. So, started the table tipping. Of course, it always takes it to get the energy built up, but it was always a fascinating experience. Impressions, Bonnie?
It's one of the most amazing things I've ever witnessed, certainly one of the I've ever taken part in. When that table started to move, I it just floored me. I could not believe it was happening.
And Mike also saw table tipping for the first time. What'd you think about it, Mike?
You know, I had my doubts at the very beginning. I mean, I expected to see something, but I didn't expect it on that level. It was amazing. You know, the table was heavy enough. It actually would take a couple of people to move it, you know, just by literally picking it up. But everybody's fingertips were on top of the table, and it literally did start sliding back and forth, and a couple of times came up off the way, you know, onto two legs. And, you know, at that point, you know, kind of the idea of anybody actually causing that to happen kind of went out the window. So there was actually something going on energy-wise there. I'm not too sure what to make of it, but that's one of those things I want to go see again. It was
definitely me too.
I know table tipping is such a fascinating thing to do, and you know there's a lot of course the naysayers, and you know I've approached, and I know we all have. We've all approached table tipping with a very open mind, you know, without preconceived notions. And every time it's just so fascinating. That table literally moves in concert. And, of course, the skeptics say, well, it's just the people moving it. Well, you know, I guess in a sense they're probably correct. You know, they talk about ideomotor effect, which is the, you know, how we will move without noticing it. And so there is some degree of truth to that. However, the way that the table moves in concert always fascinates me. If everybody was trying to move that table their own way, it would just be a conflict. It wouldn't go anywhere. And the thing always moves as if it's got a mind of its own. And you almost have to be there to even understand what it's like. It's just cool. It's just cool. So we talked about some different things. We were able to contact, or allegedly, and I say that because we're still not all for sure on what we're talking about or who we're talking with on the table, but we're able to contact some entities. Any come to mind with any of you guys?
Well, I'll tell you the one thing that was fascinated me, and was the consistency of the answers. At one point, we were talking to non-human entities. I guess, I don't know if they were interdimensionals or what they were, and we had a very long session with them. I think that was pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went into, I remember the American Indians, or the natives from the local region.
Yeah. They definitely wanted to make their presence known.
Yeah. Talk about that a little bit, Bonnie, because I know you guys had some entities that you had come across before there.
Well, we've all kind of, like I said, had that feeling of being watched, or being, you know, you're not alone. And a couple of different people have felt it, actually. I really have always thought all along it was the Native American spirit. So, like I said, it's nice to have some validation to it, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think we... Bonnie's kind of breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, she's kind of going in and out. One of the things that, until she comes back, one of the things that we did that we haven't done very often in the past is we did have the tri-field meter, which we put on the table. Yeah. And and I have to tell you, we haven't had that meter make a lot of noise on very many occasions. And that night, I mean, it wasn't you know, like a work whistle or anything, but it was responding to whatever energy was there. It was making noise, which was quite interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. It and that was something that Grant had suggested we do, and it was a good idea. You know, we put it on a little towel so it wouldn't make too much noise, you know, but we had it set to the threshold, and it was a tri-field natural meter, so it was picking up on DC EMFs. So that was great. Bonnie, you were...
Yeah, we want to also let the audience know there was no power in the cabin.
Oh, yeah.
There was no electricity, no anything of any sort, no generators, no nothing.
So we had a battery with a converter for the laptops, but we weren't using it to power lights or anything. Just a camera here and there. Bonnie, you're back now. You were talking about the
Native American
entities. Yeah, and you guys had Eric had picked up on a little girl, right? You'd had an experience.
That's right. That was on the other side of the property. He was out there hunting with his son, and they shot a deer, and they were trying to track it, and this little girl tried to tell him that the deer was running in circles. She actually called him by name, saying, "Eric, the deer's running in circles." And just after that, he heard a male voice in his ear saying, "Ignore her and she'll go away." Soon thereafter, his son and Eric were in the truck, and his kid said, "Dad, I was hearing voices out there." So they both heard the exact same thing. I have not witnessed that on that side of the property myself, though.
So, and if I recall correctly, wasn't that coming? Didn't that little girl come through? Or I know we were trying to contact.
I believe Eric was asking questions about the little girl. I don't know if she came through herself, but
Skype gods hate Bonnie.
Yeah, they're really being kind of wicked to her tonight.
She's just fading in and out a little bit.
Well, you know, Eric was kind enough to escort me over to the spot, and our first evening there. It was a very interesting spot. They had set up some hunting stands in the wilderness, and he took me to the area where that occurred. And it was quite an interesting place. I didn't hear anything myself, but if anybody would have been back there in those woods, they could have easily been lost in the dark. And to go out there trying to track a deer after it's been wounded in the dark is hard enough to begin with. But if you're out there experiencing what he experienced, that would have been pretty unsettling. And especially when it's corroborated with his boys.
Yeah.
As Bonnie just said.
And of course, Eric had some UFO experiences, and we'll kind of let that hang till next week, because Eric is going to be joining Mike on his show next week.
So he's agreed to come in and talk about his encounters. So it ought to be a really interesting show.
Now, Bonnie, you're back, so you were saying?
I also wanted to mention, we were talking about the Native American spirits and about Bigfoot and how the table really reacted when we used the word Bagwajiwanini, which is a Chippewa word for Bigfoot.
It wasn't responding when we were asking about Bigfoot or Sasquatch, right?
Right.
I don't recall it was. Yep.
And then, Bonnie, you mentioned the word. You said, go ahead.
Bagwajiwanini.
Yeah, that one.
And I remember that now. I've forgotten all about that. Yeah, that
table
is quite a reaction.
Started going crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then what? And we What did we ask the table? I haven't listened to the recording again. I should have. I get occupied with other things. Did you listen to it, Mike?
Yeah, that I was going to tell everybody. What's really weird is we did two sessions, and the first session on the digital recorder recorded perfectly all the way through the non-human entities and talking, I believe, to the Indians. But on the second session, when we did the talking to the Indians about Bigfoot and everything else, for some reason, the very beginning of that recording is missing all the way up to where I closed the session. I'm not too sure why.
The first session?
No, the second one.
Okay, so this was on the first one when we were talking about the Bigfoot.
No, I've reviewed the first one, and it wasn't on the first one, actually.
Really?
No.
Dude, when do you guys remember it happening? I thought it was the first night we talked about it.
Well, this was all the same night. We did two different sessions.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, so it must have been the second one of that night. Because we always do the table tipping the second night. So, okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but I do remember some of the questions we had, like if it was in the general area, and the answer was yes, and we got, whether or not it was nearby, and the answer was yes. And, you know, the odd thing of that was you go out and sit on the deck of that cabin, and it felt like somebody was watching you if you get quiet and just relax. And that was kind of a weird experience. So.
It was. It was a bit eerie. Of course, we looked and we were aware, and I don't know how you put it, we were monitoring for Bigfoot or any signs or any sounds or, we unfortunately didn't hear anything, no branch banging against a tree. You know, when we were doing our initial walkthrough of the area in daylight, Bonnie, I'd mentioned this to you, I was asking about broken tree limbs, at the 8 foot or so level, and didn't really see anything like that. And you said you guys had never seen anything, right? Like that.
But Doug, when Eric and I were out on, I think it was the second day that we were there, I did see a branch. We did see a branch that was broken off. A branch that was probably maybe, I don't know, an inch in diameter that was broken off at about seven or 8 feet. Not a lot of them, but it was one, it was clearly broken. That's bigger than a deer. I'd just forgotten about that until you mentioned it.
Yeah. Eric had showed me a place where he thought it was nesting, actually, when they first built the cabin out there. And what's bad about the swamp area is the foliage covers the ground so quickly. If there was anything there, it covers up probably within the month easily. And, it's hard to track anything and that kind of stuff.
Or if it's not covered up by foliage, it's covered up by water, depending on the season and how much rain they're getting.
There's some water areas.
Or the hogs tearing it up.
Yeah. If it's edible, they'll get it.
Now, Eric had mentioned that he had that there was a potential Bigfoot nest not far from the cabin. And, Mike, you kind of were talking with him about that, and you guys had kind of gone out and taking a look, but it was several years ago.
Right, and I'll tell you the interesting thing, the trees around that area he was talking about, those, where the nest was, if you'd look up about, I'd say, 10 to 15 feet in the air, these are palm trees, so they grow relatively quick. There were actually places where the bark was scarred, like somebody had literally torn the bark off the tree or had beaten the tree with something. And it was like that all around the nesting area, which I found that kind of interesting too, And that.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say the thing I want to make mention of though here, you're in an area and deer scrape, the trees to get the felt off their horns. So that's kind of one of those subjective things. It could be, it couldn't. But that's where he remembers hearing the knocking noise come from, was where that nesting area was. So,
well, Dave, of course, we know that the large primates get into knocking things together as trying to ward off people that are encroaching on their territory. So it was a very interesting experience, Eric, related about hearing things slamming hard out there. You know, it wasn't a bunny crunching on a stick.
No, I heard the same type of sounds, but years later from the same area. It sounded like two 2x4s hitting together really hard, harder than a man could do. And it went on for a long time, like 45 minutes it went on.
So you were there with Eric when that happened?
No, this was two separate occasions.
Oh, really? So you guys had...
Yeah.
I was only
years
there
apart. Yeah, years apart.
Yeah, it would have been so cool to have something like that happen.
Yeah, to me, when I heard it, it didn't sound like it was that far out from the cabin. But, you know, I would say 50 yards or something it sounded like it was coming from.
That had to be a wee bit unsettling, I would think.
It was. It was, especially
if there's an 8-foot critter out there or, you know, that close. Because whatever that critter is out there, it's letting you know it's not happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's its warning sign, like, get out of here. You're coming way too close.
Also rough.
Which is, yeah.
Did Dave have a question? Yeah, he did. Dave is asking about, what about ambient wildlife sounds, birds, insects, etc.? Bonnie, what do you think? I mean, you've been out there longer than we have. What's it like out there?
Did we lose Bonnie again?
Hello?
No.
Oh, here I am.
You there? Okay.
Yeah, I am now. What was the question?
About the ambient wildlife sounds out there. I mean, you've been there longer than, you know, we were only there a couple of nights. I mean, what's it like? Is it usually loud? Can you hear, you know, a lot of animals? Or does it go quiet at times?
You hear the occasional, you know, hogs or whatever tracking through the woods, what you assume is hogs or deer. You know, but, you know, we've been in those woods long enough to know the difference.
We can
identify those animals.
You know, I don't recall. I'm trying to think back, and I didn't notice any real sounds other than some foraging going on by little animals. We saw a raccoon.
Yeah, and I didn't even hear very many...
It's also very unusual to have that many people up there, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I don't know if that affected, you know, any of the wildlife sounds that they're used to hearing and feeling comfortable in those woods, you know, on those trails or whatever. I mean, there was twice as many people up there than there usually is at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably spooked a lot of the animals, you know, all the different scents and everything else in the air.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Because I didn't see anything. Yeah.
Hey, Bob,
I didn't even hear too many birds when we were up there, but
no.
You know, the weather was weather was kind of gloomy and wet, I did hear birds on the second day, but I didn't hear a lot. So,
Bonnie,
not even hawks or anything like that.
Growl?
We did. It was about 2 weeks before you guys were up. Gene and I were sitting on the front porch there, and I've not heard that in those woods there before, but if I had to guess, I would say it was possibly a Florida panther,
mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't that, I couldn't tell you. It sounded like that. You know, deep growl coming from the chest, deep growl, you know, real guttural sound.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, one of the things that we were able to do at the table tipping was, we've asked a lot of questions about spirit entities, different ones coming through. There was some personal stuff that was asked, and we won't go into that. But one of the things that I had been wanting to do for a long, long time is to ask questions about, you know, of non-human entities or interdimensional entities. And thankfully, for a change, I was able to ask a bunch of these questions. So, you know, I didn't ask any non-human entities to come in. And the thing that impressed me with the table this time is the consistency of answers, because I asked questions, the same question, several times in different ways, and it kept coming back with the same answer. Some of the questions I was asking was about abductions and UFOs, and I can't quite remember them all because I haven't re-listened to it. But the basic questions I wanted to know were specifically about the abduction phenomena. And I, you know, I asked these entities if they were the Greys, and I believe the answer was no. If you guys correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the answer was no. And I asked if they were aware of them. Yes. Are you the boss of the Greys? I can't remember. I think the answer was no. But I asked about the abductions, and I asked, are all abductions psychic abductions rather than physical abductions? And the answer was yes. And I asked that question several different ways, and it was all the same answer. Now,
yeah, just like four different times.
Yeah, just for the benefit of our listeners, you know, it's not like the table is gospel. You know, it's subjective, and so you have to take that into consideration. What it is, it's a tool, and it you know, if nothing else, it helps to raise more questions and clarify thinking. So I thought that was rather interesting.
I'll tell you one thing I found interesting, and one of the questions we asked Doug was who their boss was. And I think it was Eric asked him if it was the Nordics were their boss, and they answered yes.
Yeah, the Nordic Blondes.
The Nordic Blondes, and I find that fascinating. And then I believe you asked them if the Nordic Blondes were physical, and they said no. They said they were also energy beings. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. Do you remember what we got into about the Book of Ra and all that, too, how they were answering about that?
That was something that Eric had brought up afterward, that many of the answers were consistent with that. And, of course, that's something you can ask him next week on the program. The thing the reason I was so interested in this is because, you know, I have a theory that not all of these entities that we deal with are human spirits. They can be non-human spirits or on an interdimensional plane. And, you know, the theory is that if they're on an interdimensional plane similar to spirits, well, then, you know, maybe we can contact them that way. So if nothing else, it was interesting to be able to connect and ask questions such as those about the alien presence. I think I even asked if UFOs that are sighted so often are physical or not. And if I recall correctly, the answer was no.
Yeah.
Which I thought was rather interesting. You know, all these sightings that people have, you know, the table said no. I doubt that it's fully true, but it's an interesting thing. So we had a very vigorous table-tipping seance that night, and it's always an interesting experience. One of the things that we did toward the end of the table-tipping, it was kind of when the energy was dying down a little bit, but this is an experiment I've been wanting to do as part of my research, and that is to put wax paper under everybody's hands on the table. And, of course, Gregory was all for that, and in the interest of further research, and we still need to conduct more research on that, but we did. I'd provided wax paper sheets for everybody, one for each hand, and we put our hands on them. And when we did that, I don't know, the energy of the table just died down. It didn't move. But the interesting thing was when I had my hands, I don't know if anybody else experienced this, I think maybe Mike did, but when my hands were on the wax paper on the table, and I just had them spread out there on top of the table, I really felt this weird pressure almost moving backward. Now, I can't say if that's not just the natural movement of your body, the idiomotor effect, which it probably is, but it was just an interesting experience. It was almost like my hands were being pushed toward me, were coming back toward me. You know, so that's pretty easy to explain, you know, lack of more information. But the table really didn't move much, and then we stopped using them, and then it did. Well, that seems to confirm my theory that, yes, idiomotor effect is manipulating the table, but the thing that I can't explain yet is why the table moves in sync. It's like if everybody is actually moving the table unbeknownst to each individual, why is it moving in concert? Now, is this a group consciousness that's moving it, or is it the group energy that another entity is manipulating for the yes and no answers? I don't know. Any thoughts, you guys?
I don't think that it would be a group energy. I think it really is a separate entity controlling it. Whoever, whatever contact, whatever spirit we brought in, I think that's who's moving it.
Why?
I think there's too much conflicting energy between all the people that would be sitting at the table to, you know, make it go in concert, you know, make it happen.
I don't know. I understand what you're saying. The thing that puzzles me is that when you get everybody's energy, you know, because it took us, 20, 30 minutes to get the table?
According to what I was on the recording, we were looking at about 36 minutes.
Okay. So it took us quite a while, and it's, I don't know, you know, it could be, you could be very well right, Bonnie, I don't know, but it's just, it opens it up to what's moving the table, where are the answers coming from, that's another question I have. Is it the knowledge of an independent third-party sentient being where these answers are coming from, or is our group consciousness somehow dialed into the cosmic library, you know, the Akashic record? I speculate.
Well, you know, whatever it is, for me, I think that, I think it's a culmination of our energy. And with all due respect to you, Bonnie, I think a lot of times the table, and this is just my personal feeling, the table moves because of the mutual feelings of everybody there, that everybody is open to the experience. Now, whether that triggers some sort of innate or augments some sort of innate ability we may have to unharness psychokinetic energy, I don't know. But normally, I don't know if you guys felt the same way, but before the table moves for me, I can always feel the energy in the table.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel the energy in the table, and it's a good energy. It's never anything contrary. You know, we think of how many times, and without getting too sidetracked, Doug, we've had people that we'd say we use a seance as part of our investigation tools, and people would just freak out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm so scared that brings in negative energies and things like that. Get some feedback from you, Bonnie, in terms of, because I've never felt that. I've never, ever felt at the table anything negative. Quite the contrary. I've always felt something very positive. So I guess for me, I just feel that, well, maybe by through all of that unity, even if it's unconscious unity, that's maybe one of the things that's perhaps moving the table, or maybe it's opening something. So,
Bonnie, you want to
do you have any feelings like that? It's funny. Are you? Sorry, you're still there.
She hung up on us. She said,
"What
the hell?" And she went
like, "Boom! Forget about him."
No, I didn't. I felt everybody had, you know, was contributing to the energy, but I do feel that the energy that was moving the table was a separate entity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well. You know, I've seen the table move. Doug and I have both seen that table flip-flop around. We've seen it where it's actually jumped like a bucking bronco.
Yeah, it did a little bit that night.
Yeah.
It looked like it was...
It wanted to, I think.
It really looked like it. There was one point where it was just literally dancing all over me. So it's
But it tipped pretty gradually that night. It was almost at a 90-degree angle at one point in time. You guys remember?
45 anyway.
Well, not 90 yet. I would agree. 45.
45. Yeah, yeah, it was, and it was. I wish I could remember the question we asked, because it was a pretty passionate answer on the part of the table. Can a table and an inanimate object be passionate? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
It did seem to have its own personality, though. You know, as the table tipping progressed, and as the passionate answers did come through, it's just like it had its own personality outside from the group. So, I mean, that's what was amazing to me, is it actually manifested that way. And that was the most neat experience I had in the entire thing, watching, you know, observing that.
Yeah.
You know, that's something you just don't expect. You know, okay, the table's going to move, but all of a sudden, then the table starts reacting like it's an entity in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's fascinating.
Well, you know, if you recall, Doug, when we were at the Clewiston Hotel, now that hotel, for the folks who may not know, or for our folks in our audience who may not know anything about Clewiston, is supposed to be a pretty haunted hotel. You know, there's a lot of things that went there. The phone rings at a certain time, and it did. Remember that?
Yeah.
they've got an old payphone in the lobby, and all the staff there are well aware that the place is haunted. And at 11 o'clock every night, the payphone rings. And, you know, whether it's faulty wiring in the building or whatever, I tell you, like clockwork, boy, that phone rings at 10 o'clock and there's nobody there. I answer the phone. but at Clewiston, the reason why I bring it up is the energy, maybe by sitting at the table.
There's a lot more people there.
Yeah, there's a lot more people there. But what I was going to say is, maybe just by the fact that we can start to open the door a little bit to tapping into that psychokinetic energy that we may have, maybe that allows other entities to come in, like you were talking about, Bonnie. Because remember the reactions we got. There were a lot of tragic things that happened at the Clewiston Hotel, and that's why the table table had reacted so strongly it broke a leg that night.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about a little table. It was a big, heavy-duty table.
It was a big, round one, and there had to have been about, what, 10 people at that table?
Yeah.
10 or 12? I don't know. There was a lot of people at the table, a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So there was a question from Dave Bonney. Has anyone ever taken dogs out to track Bigfoot on the property?
Bonney?
There, Bonnie? We're not...
I might be able to answer part of that. I know that they don't let dogs run out there. They don't have any hunting dogs, because if you guys recall, they have a cage at the very beginning of the property where if they find any dogs running, they take them up there and put them in a cage.
Yeah, I remember him telling us about that.
Because there are big avid deer hunters there, and they don't want any dogs running down their game.
Is that true, Bonnie? Yeah, no dogs have been... Oh, we lost her again. She just came back. I don't know. There's some... Are you back, Bonnie?
Yeah, but I haven't heard a word you said.
Okay. We were asking about dogs. The question was, have any dogs ever been taken out to track Bigfoot or anything else?
Not on our property, no.
So Grant was spot on.
Yeah, no, I was reminded of the cage up front, Bonnie, where... dogs running through your property, you bring them up and put them in that cage.
Well, that was for, that's right, lost dog.
Well, no,
yeah,
I believe those are for guys that do run dogs for hunting on their own property, not ours.
Cool. So, any rate, so we had a rather interesting evening on the table tipping. It's a fascinating experience. Some videos. I'm trying to think of where I've had them in different places. I know that there's some table tips and CPI course, and I'm going to have to get our next.org to see if we have any on there, and if not, then I'll load one or two that people can watch. And honestly, it's, you know, to look at it through a video and not be there, it's real easy to say, yeah, you guys were moving a few feet, you know, moving the table. We always instruct people to have their feet behind them, and it's honestly until you experience it that you begin to think, wow, something else is going on here that I can't quite experience. And, of course, Grant, you touched on it, and Mike, you touched on it in an earlier conversation on the power of belief in the table. You know, to what degree does that power of belief come into play?
Well, yeah, you're talking about belief, intent, and expectation, and you know, that's really powerful mechanisms in themselves. And I don't know that you know, just everybody's expectation doesn't add to the energy of the table in itself. You know, and the belief, you know, helps facilitate it. So. It's just amazing. You know, you get a lot of people in sync, and for some reason that energy builds, you know. And I told Doug, you know, talking to him before, you know, for this show, I think it was last night, how I observed the same kind of effect when I went on another investigation, and these people had preconceived notions of what to expect, you know, their expectations, and lo and behold, they experienced. And I find that really fascinating, you know, that whole entire mechanism functions. It's hard to say with the table. Like I said, the table itself actually became its own, it had its own personality. So I wanted to say that's part of the mechanism, but, you know, I don't think that's the end-all answer to what's going on with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's curious to witness it. I mean, you know, like Doug said, you know, you see it on a video, that's one thing. But when you're there, and there's one point where I actually held my heel and left my fingertips on the table, and the table was still moving underneath my fingertips, and it was moving in a predetermined direction. And there's no way for all those people to be perfectly in concert like that. I just don't see it. I don't see it, you know.
So we ended the night that way. Of course, we stayed up longer, and Grant went on, you know, he went out on his own private excursion with Eric until, what, 3:30?
I think it was about 3 o'clock or close
Grant,
to 3 o'clock.
Grant never stays up till 3 a.m. at home.
Yep, this is the absolute truth, you know. I'm not
the hell
but it was
always stays up till 3 a.m. at home.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it wasn't bad. I really enjoyed it because, you know, Eric took me to the place where, you know, where he had felt the presence of the little girl, and actually got to go out there twice. And, you're absolutely correct, Doug. That's way past my bedtime. But you know what? I was on a camping trip, and
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, really. Don't have to go to bed early.
That's right.
So then we crashed finally, and the next day it was kind of rainy and blustery and all that. We spent some time, you know, just doing some things around the area, and then later in the afternoon, I know that's when Mike and Eric went looking for the any evidence of that nest that Eric had talked about. And then that evening, Bonnie made another wonderful dinner, along with great help from Gene. They were really great at that.
Yeah, they were.
And we really appreciate the hospitality that you guys showed. It was incredible. We've lost Bonnie. And while she's gone, I'm just going to tell everybody that that's why we're all going to go live with her, right?
Yep. Absolutely. I'm packing up here, man.
So we're all going to go live with Bonnie.
You know, the one thing, you know, that night, the first night there, I was up early. Even after staying up so late, you know. And one of the things that was really cool about the cabin, Eric's cabin, is that it had that nice deck around the whole cabin. You could sit out there and kind of watch the sun come up out there. And I was telling this to Mike that I could have sworn many times looking out into the dark or you know, where it's gradually getting more light, that I saw all kinds of things moving around out there.
Really?
And, yeah, and, you know, as it became more light, you know, my mind, what it was the pareidolia. My mind was trying to make sense out of what was out there, you know, find a pattern, find a design, and as light, you know, it became more light, I realized that what I was seeing is one bush in a position behind another bush, and the shades of dark and light made it look like it was a pig standing there, you know. And my mind wanted to make that silhouette into a pig. So, you know, it's part of the process of, you know, being aware of the fact for investigators that, you know, your mind is naturally going to try to do that. It's going to naturally try to matrix and make a pattern out of things.
Mm-hmm.
But when all was said and done at the end of the day, it was nothing more but a trick of light
mm-hmm.
and shadow.
So then we Okay, hey everybody, we're back. For some odd reason, Skype just dropped everybody out of this, and I think it was my internet connection because my chat room was there.
I'm back.
Yeah, good. Okay, Bonnie, can you move your mic just a little bit away from your mouth for me? And then let's see if we can get everybody else back. That was odd. That doesn't happen very often. But we apologize for the...
Doug, I told you to quit playing with that Ouija board.
I know it, but I don't need it, man.
You know, you're at it again. Boy, oh boy, that's
Ouija
what it's said
right here.
I know it.
With it. You know, I'm trying to...
You're trying to disguise it.
And, yeah, I didn't know you'd pick up...
You open, and you know what? We told you, and went north and opened the portal again. That's why Skype's not working.
Yeah, but Mike's... I don't know if this is a widespread thing because Mike's not back online.
Did we lose Mike, too?
He's not back online. Now he's
Bonnie,
back.
Are you still with us?
I'm here.
All right. Mike will be back soon.
So, at any rate, we did the table tipping the second night. I didn't think it was as active as it had been the first night. Do you guys have any comments on the second night's table tipping?
Well, it's hard for me because I didn't participate. But
well, that's right.
I tell right. You guys because I stayed up so late, you know, and got about a total of 3 hours of restful sleep, I was kind of crashed out. But I recall, you know, in between times of consciousness, it was moving around. I could hear it moving on the cabin floor. So it must have been a pretty good session.
You know, one of the questions we asked, Grant, was whether or not it wanted us to wake you up, and it went nuts. That was great.
Sorry,
yeah.
Except he shouldn't be in bed.
I'm indispensable to the table, yeah.
Anything you want to add about the table tipping on the second night, Bonnie?
I'm sorry, you're cutting in and out again.
You know, I don't know what the problem is tonight, and I know that everybody seems to be cutting in and out a little bit here and there. On the second night, on the table tipping, any comments you want to make on that?
Oh, yeah, I did notice that it just did not seem to be as active the second night as it was on the first.
Right. And, you know, and then that's also an interesting thing because, you know, we were all a little more tired, right?
Exactly.
I was going to say, that's the observation I made, too, is everybody was exhausted, actually. And I said, you know, I'm wondering if that has to do with the energy of the group, you
yeah.
know.
It would seem so. It would seem so. So then we, after that, we, of course, did some talking. And, of course, the whole time we didn't do any aside from monitoring the area, We didn't go out doing any expeditions for Bigfoot or anything. We were monitoring the area as we were outside. But then decided to do a regression on Eric, who has had some UFO experiences. And I'm just going to briefly discuss that. You guys can talk about that more in your show next week, Mike.
Okay.
But Eric has never done hypnosis before, and of course, anybody's first time with hypnosis, it's always not as effective as it is with subsequent sessions, but we went ahead and tried, and it was an unsuccessful attempt. I mean, Eric got really relaxed, didn't he?
Definitely.
Yeah, but he was still trying to analyze everything, and regardless of the techniques I was using to get his analytical mind off and some other distant galaxy, it wasn't working. So hopefully we'll be having an opportunity to try that again, and I know it will work the next time.
Yeah, now he did mention to me that he thought that if there was less people around, he'd
mm-hmm.
probably
sure.
have an easier time of relaxing it. So.
Yeah, because we had everybody around. But it was interesting to do that. Trying to think of some other highlights of the trip. What did you take away from it, Bonnie? Anything you particularly learned?
Well, being new to a paranormal investigative team myself, I just started, you know, my own team a few months back. You know, it's very educational to me to see other people working together. You know, So I really appreciated that, you know, watching, you know, some seasoned, experienced investigators working together.
Go ahead, Bonnie. Maybe she's going ahead. I'm not hearing her.
No, I think she dropped off.
But you know that, and that's nice. And I mean, we only got about 4 or 5 minutes left. Grant, anything you took away from it?
Yeah, you know, it was really a remarkable place. And you know, I think that all investigators have to realize that just because you go out there, if there is any energy, if there's anything going on out there, just your presence alone may scare it off. And we didn't have the luxury of staying for like a week there. And logistically, that just wasn't possible. The table tipping was very satisfactory, you know. We got it to move. We got it to, you know, show folks what it was about. So, yeah, I think all in all, we got a lot of interesting information, and Eric contributed a great deal to our knowledge base in regards to abduction experience, because we're collecting that data and we're going to cross-reference it as time goes on for similarities, like so many others have done before, but we'll work on it. So I think it was all in all, it was great to meet Gene and Eric and Bonnie, and you know, they're part of Paranexus, and yep. We're delighted to have them, and you know, I just wish we could have spent more time.
Hey, Bonnie, you want to finish up what you were saying? You kind of broke off at the end there. You were talking about working with a group.
Yeah, I was saying that it was really nice to observe other, you know, investigators that have worked in groups before, watching them investigating things, because I just haven't had that experience. I've been doing this on my own for many, many years, and now that I'm with a group, I just, you know, kind of want to make sure I'm going down the right alley, you know, as far as, you know, how we work together and stuff. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, CLPI course really helped me out there too.
Well, good. How about you, Mike? What did you take away from it?
Well, number one, by the way, Bonnie, I'm moving down there, and just be prepared to cook supper every night.
Oh. Not a problem. Not a problem.
other than it was just amazing to work with, like she said, seasoned veterans. You know, it really opened my eyes to a lot of things. It was fun. That was the most fun I've had in quite a while. You know.
And investigations can be fun. In the minute and a half or so we got left, investigations can be fun. They can be light, but you know, we also take it very seriously. So hopefully, we were able to show a little bit more laid back or not apprehensive or anxiety ridden type of an investigation. I mean, that's what we usually do, right, Grant?
Yeah, we are pretty laid back because we're not anticipating that. We're going to open portals with demons or
my pocket Ouija board.
Yeah. So no, it was
a great opportunity, and
it was.
And
we
it was
really
great
did appreciate it,
everybody. And Bonnie, we thank you so much for joining us tonight on the show. It was great to have you.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Unfortunately, I keep cutting in and out, but I really enjoyed being here with you guys tonight.
Well, we'll have to have you back sometime, and you know, we want to say how delighted we are to have all three of you guys with us on board at Paranexus, because you're going to be a real asset to us. So,
and are, yeah.
Welcome, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do appreciate that, guys.
Yeah, so hang tough and with us for a moment, and Mike, it was great meeting you, and of course, next week you're going to have Eric Watson on the show to continue this discussion and on his abduction experiences and UFO experiences, so yes. Folks will want to tune in for that one.
Yeah, that should be great.
And, you know, I'd like to just one last thing. I would really like to throw in a big plug for Cedar Key. For anybody who hasn't been to Cedar Key, that was my first time. And there is a haunted hotel out there that we didn't get you to talk about, Bonnie, but it's a wonderful place. It's very quaint. It's very nice. It's beautiful up there. Very beautiful part of old Florida.
All right. Well, we've just got a few seconds left. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening in on the live show or the archive. And come visit us at Paranexus.org. We'd love to have you join us. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
night, in the shadows, in the sky, it's Paranexus Universe.